So, how you doing? Baker said. Feeling bad about your brother? I shrugged at him, drank my coffee left-handed. My right hand was wrapped around the Desert Eagle in my pocket. We weren't close, I said. Baker nodded. Roscoe still helping the Bureau out? He said. Guess so, I said. And where's old Finley tonight? He asked. Jacksonville, I said. He had to go to Florida, check something out. Jacksonville, he said. What does he need to check out in Jacksonville? I shrugged again, sipped my coffee. Search me, I said. He didn't tell me anything. I'm not on the payroll, I'm just an errand boy. Now he's got me running up to Hubble's place to fetch him something.
Hubble's place? Baker said. What you got to fetch from there?
Some old papers, I said. Anything I can find, I guess.
Then what? He said.
You going to Florida, too? I shook my head, sipped more coffee. Finley told me to stick him in the mail, I said. Some Washington address. I'm going to sleep up at Hubble's place and mail them in the morning. Baker nodded slowly. Then he flashed his friendly grin again. But it was forced. We finished up our coffee. Baker dropped a couple of bucks on the table and we slid out and left. He got into his patrol car, waved at me as he drove off. I let him go ahead and strolled over the gravel to the Bentley. I rolled south to the end of the dark little town and made the right turn up Beckman Drive. Chapter 26. I had to be very careful about where I put the Bentley. I wanted it to look like it was just casually dumped, but it had to be left so nobody could get past it. I inched it back and forth for a while, left it at the top of Hubble's driveway with the wheels turned away. It looked like I'd driven up in a hurry and just slewed to a stop. I wanted the house to look like I was in there. Nothing is more obvious than an empty building. That quiet, abandoned look is a giveaway. There's a stillness, no human vibrations. So I opened the front door with the key from the big bunch Charlie had given me, walked through and turned on some random lights. In the den, I switched the television set on and left it at a low murmur. Same thing with the radio in the kitchen. Pulled a few drapes, went back outside. It looked pretty good. Looked like there might be someone in there. Then the first stop was the coat closet off the main hallway. I was looking for gloves. Not easy to find in the Sun Belt. Not much call for them. But Hubble had some. Two pairs, lying neatly on a shelf. One was a pair of ski gloves, lime green and lilac. Not much good to me. I wanted something dark. The other pair was what I wanted. Dressy things in thin, black leather. Banker's gloves, very soft, like a second skin. The ski gloves made me look for a hat. If the Hubbles had taken trips up to Colorado, they'd have had all the gear. I found a box of hats. There was a kind of watch cap in there, some sort of a synthetic fiber. The bottom part rolled down to make ear flaps. The hat was printed up in a dark green pattern. It would do. Next stop was the master bedroom. I found Charlie's vanity table. It was bigger than some of the rooms I'd lived in. She had a mass of cosmetics, all kinds of things. I took a tube of waterproof mascara into the bathroom, smeared it all over my face, then I fastened the jacket, put on the hat, put on the gloves. I walked back into the bedroom and checked the result in the full-length mirrors on the closet doors. Not bad. Just about right for night work. I went back outside, locked up the front door again. I could feel the huge storm clouds clamping down overhead. It was very dark. I stood by the front door and checked myself over, put the pistol in the inside jacket pocket, moved the zip down and checked the draw. Came out okay. Loaded, cocked, safety on. Spare shells in the outside top right pocket, switchblade in the left side pocket, blackjack in the right side pocket, shoes tightly laced. I walked down the driveway away from the house, past the parked Bentley 12 or 15 yards, pushed through the greenery and settled in a spot where I could just about see up and down the drive. I sat on the cold earth and got ready to wait.
In an ambush situation, waiting is what wins the battle. If the other guy is wary, he'll come early or late, when he figures you won't be expecting him. So however early he might make it, you've got to be ready earlier. However late he might leave it, you've got to wait it out. You wait in a kind of trance. You need infinite patience. No use fretting or worrying, you just wait. Doing nothing, thinking nothing, burning no energy. Then, you burst into action. After an hour, 5 hours, a day, a week. Waiting is a skill, like anything else. It was a quarter to midnight when I settled in for the wait. I could feel the storm boiling up overhead. The air was like soup. It was pitch dark. About midnight, the storm broke. Heavy drops the size of quarters spattered the leaves around me. They built into a deluge within seconds. It was like sitting in a shower stall. Awesome thunderclaps crashed about. They ripped and banged, and the lightning blazed in sheets. The garden around me was lit up like day for seconds at a time. I sat under the lashing rain and waited. 10 minutes. 15. They came for me at 20 minutes past midnight. The rain was still bad, and the thunder was still crashing and rolling. I didn't hear their truck until it was well up the driveway. I heard it crunching over the gravel about 40 feet away. It was a dark green panel truck, gold lettering. Kleiner Foundation, like the one I'd seen near Roscoe's place on Tuesday morning. It crunched past me about 6 feet away, wide tires on the gravel. That's what Finley had seen up at the Morrison place. Marks in the gravel made by wide tires. The truck stopped a few yards beyond me. It pulled up sharp just behind the Bentley. Couldn't get past. Just where I wanted it. I heard the engine stop and the parking brake ratchet on. First guy out was the driver. He was wearing a white nylon bodysuit. It had a hood pulled tight around his face. Over his face was a surgical mask. He was wearing thin rubber gloves. On his feet, rubber overshoes. He vaulted out of the driver's seat and walked around to the rear doors. I knew that walk. I knew that tall, heavy build. I knew those long, powerful arms. It was the Kleiner kid. The Kleiner kid himself had come to kill me. He slapped his palm on the rear door. It made a hollow boom. Then he turned the handle and opened up. 4 men came out, all dressed the same. White nylon bodysuits, hoods pulled tight, masks, gloves, rubber overshoes. 2 were carrying bags, 2 had long, fat shotguns. A total of 5 men. I'd expected 4. 5 was going to be harder, but more productive. The rain was lashing down on them. I could hear the brittle spatter as it hit their stiff nylon suits. I could hear the metallic clang as the heavy drops bounced off the roof of their truck. I saw them caught by a lightning flash. They looked like banshees, like something escaped from hell. They were a terrifying sight. For the first time, I doubted if I would have beaten them on Monday night. But I was going to beat them tonight. Tonight, I would have the advantage of surprise. I would be an invisible nightmare figure let loose among them. The Kleiner kid was organizing them. He reached into the back of the truck and pulled out a crowbar, pointed to 3 of his soldiers, and walked off with them through the downpour to the house. The 5th guy was going to wait with the truck. Because of the rain, he was going to get back in the cab. I saw him glance up at the black sky and glance forward at the driver's seat. I pulled out the sap, forced my way through the bushes. The guy couldn't hear me. The rain was roaring in his ears. He turned his back and took a step toward the driver's door. I shut my eyes for a second and pictured Joe lying on the slab at the morgue with no face. Pictured Roscoe shaking with horror as she stared at the footprints on her hallway floor. Then I crashed out of the bushes, skipped up behind the guy, smashed the sap across the back of his skull. It was a big sap, and I gave it all I had. I felt the bone explode under it. The guy went down on the gravel like a tree. He lay face down, and the rain hammered on his nylon suit. I broke his neck with a single mighty kick. 1 down. I dragged the body across the gravel and left it at the back of the truck, walked around and pulled the keys out of the ignition, crept on up to the house. I put the sap back in my pocket, popped the switchblade and carried it in my right hand. I didn't want to use the gun in the house. Too noisy, even with the thunder crashing outside. I stopped inside the front door. The lock was forced and the wood was splintered. I saw the crowbar on the hallway floor. It was a big house. It was going to take them some time to search it. My guess was they'd stick together as a group of four. They'd search together, then they'd split up. I could hear them tramping through the upper floor. I stepped back outside to wait for one of them to come down into the hallway. I waited, pressed against the wall next to the broken door. I was sheltered by the overhang of the roof. The rain was still torrential. It was as bad as a tropical storm. I waited nearly 5 minutes before the first one came downstairs. I heard the creak of his tread in the hallway, heard him open the coat closet door. I stepped inside the house. His back was to me. He was one of the shotgun carriers, tall, lighter than me. I fell in behind him, reached over the top of his head with my left hand, stuck my fingers in his eyes. He dropped the shotgun. It thudded onto the carpet. I pulled him backward and turned him and ran him out through the door, into the downpour, dug my fingers deeper into his eyes, hauled his head back, cut his throat. You don't do it with one elegant swipe. Not like in the movies. No knife is sharp enough for that. There's all kinds of tough gristle in the human throat. You have to saw back and forth with a lot of strength. Takes a while, but it works. It works well. By the time you've sawed back to the bone, the guy is dead. This guy was no exception. His blood hosed out and mixed with the rain. He sagged against my grip. Two down. I dragged the body over to the lawn by the top of his hood. No good picking him up under the knees and shoulders. His head would have lolled back and fallen off. I left him on the grass, ran back inside, picked up the shotgun, and grimaced. It was a serious weapon. An Ithaca Mag 10. I'd seen them in the army. They fire an enormous cartridge. People call them the roadblocker. There's enough power in them to kill people through the side of a soft-skinned vehicle. Face to face, they're devastating. They only hold 3 cartridges, but like we used to say, by the time you've fired 3 rounds, the battle is definitely over. I kept the blade out as my weapon of choice. Silent, but the shotgun would be better than the Desert Eagle as backup. Thing is, with a shotgun, aiming is a luxury. A shotgun sprays a wide cone of lead. With a Mag 10, as long as it's pointed vaguely in the right direction, you're going to score. I stepped back out through the splintered door and pressed against the wall, out of the deluge. I waited. Now my guess was they'd start coming out of the house. They wouldn't find me in there, and they'd miss the guy I'd just dropped. So they'd start coming out. It was inevitable. They couldn't stay in there forever. I waited. 10 minutes. I could hear creaking from the floor inside. Ignored it. Sooner or later, they'd come out. They came out. 2 guys together. They came as a pair. That made me hesitate a fraction. They stepped out into the downpour, and I heard the rain start roaring against their nylon hoods. I pulled out the sap again, swapped it into my right hand. The first guy went down easily enough. I caught him square on the back of his neck with the heavy sap, and his head nearly came off. But the second guy reacted and twisted away so that I missed with the next swing. The sap just smashed his collarbone and dropped him to his knees. I stabbed him left-handed in the face, lined up for another shot with the sap. Took me 2 more blows to break his neck. He was a wiry guy, but not wiry enough. 4 down. I dragged the 2 bodies through the lashing rain to the lawn at the edge of the gravel drive. Piled them with the other guy. I had 4 down and 1 shotgun captured, the truck keys in my pocket, the Kleiner kid with the shotgun still on the loose. I couldn't find him. I didn't know where he was. I stepped into the house out of the rain and listened. Couldn't hear a thing. The roar of the rain on the roof and on the gravel outside was too much. It was putting up a mask of white noise over everything else. If the kid was alerted and creeping around, I wouldn't hear him. It was going to be a problem. I crept into the garden room. The rain was hammering on the roof. I stood still and listened hard. Heard the kid in the hallway. He was on his way out. He was going out the front door. If he turned right, he was going to trip over his three dead grunts piled on the lawn. But he turned left. He walked past the garden room windows. He was heading across the soaking lawn to the patio area. I watched him walk by, through the deluge, maybe 8 feet away. Looked like a ghost from hell. A ghost from hell holding a long, black shotgun out in front of him. I had the garden room key in my pocket, on the Bentley ring. I unlocked the door and stepped out. The rain hit me like a drenching from a fire hose. I crept around to the patio. The Kleiner kid was standing there, looking down toward the big swimming pool. I crouched in the rain and watched him. From 20 feet, I could hear the downpour thrashing against his white nylon bodysuit. Lightning was searing the sky, and the thunder was a continuous crashing. I didn't want to shoot him with the Mag-10 I was holding. I had to dispose of the bodies. I had to leave old man Kleiner unsettled. I had to keep him guessing about what had happened, about where his boy had disappeared to. It would unbalance him, and it was crucial to my own safety. I couldn't afford to leave the slightest shred of evidence behind. Using the big Ithaca against the kid would make a hell of a mess. Disposing of his body would be a severe problem. Finding all of it would be difficult. I waited. The kid set off down the long, sloping lawn to the pool. I looped around, staying on the wet grass. The kid walked slowly. He was worried. He was on his own. His vision wasn't good. The tight hood around his face was limiting his field of view. He kept turning his head from side to side, stiff-necked, like a mechanical thing. He stopped at the edge of the pool. I was a yard behind him. I was swaying left and right, left and right, staying out at the edge of his vision as he swung his gaze from side to side. His massive shotgun was traversing left and right over the teeming pool. The books I used to read, the movies people see, I should have fought him nobly. I was here to stand up for my brother, and right in front of me was the guy who'd kicked his body around like a bundle of rags. We should have duked it out, face to face. He should have been made aware of who his opponent was. He should have been made aware of why he had to die. All that noble man-to-man stuff. But real life wasn't like that. Joe would have laughed at all that.